Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Warning. The truly unusual motion picture you are about to see contains many scenes of graphic violence. It is not intended for the faint of heart, nor the young and impressionable. While it is a sad fact that mass homicide and practitioners of blood cults infest our society, the producers of this film wish to express that they do not condone, nor do they want to inspire, any of the human butchery or violence portrayed in this film. If you feel you will be offended by such material, please leave the theater at once. Note: all of the mutilations, body dismemberments, and cannibal rituals were performed by seasoned professionals. Please do not attempt any of these stunts at home. Thank you.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street. I'm John.
I'm Kim.
And this week we are talking about kooky cannibals in part one of a two-part episode. This week we are talking about Jackie Kong's Blood Diner, and
it's kooky.
It is very kooky. I don't think I was really prepared for the level of humor this movie had. I thought it was just like, oh, a silly, dumb cannibal movie that's unintentionally funny. It's a straight-up horror comedy, and its sense of humor is twisted.
Yeah, this movie has been on my radar for years, and
well, it comes around every February, right? Female-directed horror film, and we just for some reason never watched
well,
it.
Well, we've always wanted to put it on the podcast, and I wanted to keep it special for the podcast, and we are...
This was the right choice.
Oh, boy.
I really have to commend you on this.
I cannot wait to get into it. But before we start this week's episode, as we usually do, John, what is keeping you creepy this week?
TIFF starts this week, so we are back in film festival season. We just finished up Fantasia. I mean, hell, Telluride and Venice are also happening right now, but we live just outside of Toronto, and we will be covering the Midnight Madness selections at TIFF. I think there are two movies in particular that we are both very excited to check out. One being Rob Savage, Gemma Hurley, and Jed Shepard's Dash Cam.
Woo, I'm so excited.
The creators of Host have a new fucking movie. They made it with Blumhouse, and it's premiering at TIFF.
And it's, like, super under wraps. All we have is one...
They haven't said anything.
Yeah, all we have is one still photo. Like, it's from a dash cam. There's, like, a figure in the road.
Yeah, we don't even know who's in the movie.
I'm excited. I don't know anything about it, but I'm stoked. I'm very excited. So that's premiering at TIFF. We are also seeing Edgar Wright's Last Night in Soho.
Fuck yeah, we are.
I'm so excited.
That's a movie that I know a little bit more about than, say, Dashcam, but I am trying to know as little as possible.
Exactly.
About
like
it.
Anya Taylor-Joy giallo.
Right? Yeah. Like a late 70s.
Yes, please,
British
trailer
horror.
Off.
Yep. That's all I needed to know. Yeah, there are a whole ton of movies playing at TIFF that we're probably going to check out. Movies like Dune, but like, you know, like, I'm not going to read all six of those books before, and even the first book feels like six books. I've tried reading it. Not happening. I'm only going for the horror movies, and those are two that I will not rest until we've seen.
Speaking of horror movies, I don't know if you know about a little dude named James motherfucking Wan. Malignant is coming out this week.
Yeah, that's right. We have a short interview with James Wan at the website that you can check out right now. I think by the time this episode comes out, my review for the movie will also be out, because I've already seen it.
Yeah, so let's just side note over here and talk about this little Nightmare on Film Street James Wan exclusive experience that Jonathan had.
I know, I felt like a contest winner.
John got to go see the movie in theaters, special press screening, and got to fucking talk to James Wan.
It was a good day.
While I sat in the other room in my pajamas just like, trying not to listen because I have not seen the movie. This is what happens when you start a media outlet with your significant other. Sometimes they get to see Malignant without you, and then talk to the director about it and get the scoop on fucking animatronics. John, animatronics?
People are really responding to that in the interview that we published. I mean, the best thing you could do is go in with no expectations of anything. Just like, it's a new fucking James Wan horror movie. I will at least say I think fans of early 2000s, late 90s horror will especially appreciate it, especially how it looks. It looks like a...
That's me!
That's definitely you. It's almost like a supernatural serial killer movie from the Dark Castle universe. I think I'm selling it a little too hard for you, so maybe try and just like erase all that from your head, because I'd be really upset if I got you amped up and you didn't like it. But it's definitely, I'll say, one of the weirdest movies James Wan has ever made.
That sounds great. I'm so excited.
We're going to be recording a podcast about the movie. It's going to be coming out next week. So part two of Kooky Cannibals you will get in 2 weeks' time. And that's because we have a few changes here at Nightmare on Film Street.
Oh, look at you bringing it around. I'm sorry, I'm still in Malignant land. I'm like, oh, yeah.
I know, I'm really excited for you to see it. I'm excited to see it in the theater again, too. But I'm excited to talk to you about it. It's going to be real hard to... You know, it's been a while since we've done those drive home from the drive-in reviews where we go see a movie together and then say nothing to each other until we get home in front of the microphones. But that's what we're going to be doing next week. We're going to be doing a spoiler-free review of Malignant with a full spoiler companion for the Fiend Club, talking about all the nitty-gritty bits of the movie. But if you want to listen to that podcast review before you see the movie, we will spoil nothing, which is going to be hard.
Especially because you're going to have seen it twice.
Yeah.
But yeah, so some exciting things to mention that John kind of touched on. We're changing up the format of the podcast a little bit to have more of a steady Nightmare on Film Street drip feed.
Yeah.
When we started this, we did every Thursday, and it got to be kind of a crazy workload, so we went to bi-weekly. And now we kind of do this hodgepodge of, like, sometimes we do every Thursday, sometimes we don't. Going forward, we're going to try to do every Thursday. We'll probably take a Thursday here and there off, you know, for our own peace of mind, but we're splitting up our typical head-to-head episodes. We're going to do them as two parts. It'll be the exact same format that you love and remember, but it'll be done over two different episodes. So we can feel a little bit more liberty to explore movies maybe a little bit more in depth or not. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, we just want to make sure that you have a new episode of Nightmare, a new Nightmare every Thursday at midnight. And also, podcasts are too fucking long, guys. Let's be real. Let's all take a step back and recognize that it's insane that every podcast you listen to is upwards of 2 hours long. Every single podcast.
Yeah, I'm thinking I want to be more like a commute. And for us here, that's like 40-ish minutes. That's
if traffic's good. What are you talking about?
That's a nice, hearty commute.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't want you to have to wait 2 weeks in between new episodes. We want to make sure that we've got some new content for you every single week. It might be interviews. It might be reviews of new movies that are in the theater. And if not, at the very least, we're always going to be talking about some of our favorite classic movies spread out over two episodes.
With our fun themes. Like this week's Kooky Cannibals, we got two movies picked for you. We're talking about one this week. And then John said we're doing Malignant review next week. And then we'll finish up with Kooky Cannibals the week after. But if that's too much information for you, all you got to do is hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast, and it'll download right away. It'll be in there for you Thursday morning, Wednesday night. I don't know what country you're from, so whatever your time zone is, we upload it around midnight on Wednesday Eastern time. So figure it out.
But let's get into it. Let's talk about our first movie in our Kooky Cannibals double feature. We're talking about Jackie Kong's Blood Diner.
Ah, hello, fellow food lovers. I'm Phil Mignon, world-famous gourmet. In my travels, I've sampled some of the most exquisite foods the world has to offer. That's why they've asked me to tell you all about a charming new eatery located right downtown. As you can see, the atmosphere is lovely. But, of course, the finest attribute of this quaint cafe is the marvelous cuisine. A
give my right arm for that secret recipe.
Yes, the chef puts a bit of himself into every succulent dish. Oh, and he's always pleased to serve you to your friends. Shouldn't that be serve you and your friends? No. Your gracious hostess will direct you to your table, where you will dine as if there's no tomorrow. So, breeze on down and don't let anything stand in your way. This Epicurean haven is called Blood Diner.
You got that right.
So, this is Phil Mignon, saying bon appetit. Oh, mommy.
The Blood Diner. First they greet you, then they eat you.
No one under 17 admitted.
World famous gourmet. Gourmet.
Damn, you know, that trailer, like, really sells that movie.
That trailer was a whole journey.
If we had to watch that trailer before we watched the movie, I think we would have been really prepared for what we were in for.
I'm actually really pleased how blind we went into this. I would have loved it regardless, but
This seems like your kind of dumb movie.
Thank you. No, it was such a fun viewing experience. I have at least 5 scenes that I moments I have to absolutely talk about just for the sheer fact that I need to confirm that they happened and that they exist.
Right? We had to both constantly look at each other like, we are seeing this, right? We didn't get food poisoning and are hallucinating this movie right now.
Oh, boy. Watching Blood Diner for the first time was akin to the entire Shudderverse discovering Tammy and the T-Rex last year.
Oh, sure.
Just the sheer, like, bonkers delusionalness of it that you're just like, is this meta?
It's from another world.
Is this intentional? Is there a layer of intent here?
Well, you know, they both also feature brains in jars,
brains,
so not a bad comparison.
Brains in things and brains in jars.
Speaking of Shudder, there is no Metacritic rating when you look this movie up, but they do list the Shudder rating. The Shudder audience has given it a 3.8 out of 5, which is high praise. I think that's the highest rating that it has across the internet, because it also has a 57% on Rotten Tomatoes, 5.3 out of 10 on IMDb, and 3.0 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
I mean, that's pretty good on Letterboxd.
It's not bad. Yeah, you know what's funny is most of the people that I follow have given it like 5 stars or like 4 stars. It's just like, yeah.
And at this point, it's like a cult movie from, I think, 1987.
Yeah.
So people are seeking it out to see this movie.
Every single one of these ratings is retroactive.
Yeah, so anybody seeing this in like 2021, whatever year it is currently, are giving it 5 stars, I think, because I'm going to rate it 5 stars right now.
I completely understand. The funny thing is I could not find any information on box office numbers. Now, I did only
there
look
was no
for
box.
45 seconds.
There was no office.
This movie was a front. Like, this movie, they just threw money into it. This is a money laundering operation for sure. I couldn't find any reviews at the time. I think TV Guide slammed it a little bit. That was about it.
TV Guide.
Yeah. Oh, man. What a bizarre movie. Can I ask you one
Jokes
question?
Jokes on TV Guide. This movie outlived TV Guide.
I take that, you fucks. Can I ask you one question, though, before we get started?
Yeah.
What's the name of this fucking restaurant? The movie takes place at a health food restaurant. I don't know the name of the restaurant.
Okay.
Because outside the sign is a squiggle.
Okay, so I wrote it down because it's a decal on their truck. It's Tutman Cafe, which is their name backwards. But you're so right. There are moments where we're with the detectives outside of the cafe, which is just a corner building, a low-rise office.
Mm-hmm.
Not what I would have decided for a roadside diner, but, you know, you work with what you got.
It's a health food store.
They did not have any kind of logo. It looked, I think it was like an olive on fire.
Oh, yeah, that totally looks like that. I see it.
A flaming olive.
I think that we could talk about this movie in a scrambled, jumbled mess.
I was thinking,
it
I was like,
make a difference.
How are we going to do this? Because sometimes, like, when we do movies that we were seeing for the first time or we're not too familiar, we like to walk through the plot a bit.
Yeah,
and it's,
let's avoid that.
Does that even will that work for this?
Let's try and do this. This is something we used to do, and to be perfectly honest, I think something we should bring back. Like, while we're talking about things that we're changing on the podcast, this is totally something we should do. Kim, what's the TLDR version of this movie? Give me, like, a 2-sentence log line. What the fuck is this about?
Oh, God. Okay, so a couple of nephews
yeah
reanimate the corpse of their
okay
reanimate the brain of their serial murderer uncle,
yes,
in order to get guidance on completing a ritual to raise an ancient deity that requires multiple body part sacrifices as well as a grand feast.
Yes,
they're also
nailed
chefs
it. Nailed
at
it.
A cannibal vegetarian diner.
Yeah, here's the thing. They are not advertising that they are cannibals. Who would? They are, in fact, a health food store. Specifically a vegetarian restaurant. And they are the talk of the town. And oh my god, people can't get enough of this place because they don't realize they're eating human beings. That's the core of the movie. It ping-pongs around that a lot. Two of my favorite things about this are the cold open of the movie is just some kids playing alone in a house, and a murderer is breaking down the door, and the kids are terrified. They're hiding for their lives. The killer, he's got a meat cleaver in his hand, and he's in the house, and then all of a sudden they're just like, super. Oh, it's Uncle Anwar, and they're no longer scared whatsoever. It's just really...
He's got to pass on the family duty.
I think at that point I did not know that this was a comedy, and it just seemed like a weird choice. Now that I'm looking at it, I think it's just a gag. Like, I think it's spoofing on what a cold open for a horror movie should be. Right?
Yeah, the opening kind of reminded me, none of the rest of the movie, but the opening of the movie, it gave me very like Christmas Evil vibes. Like, you realize that these kids are destined to grow up and do something very, very awful.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because, yeah, like, we get the cursed book, they get the amulets, which don't really come into play very much, and there's the hypnotizing the
dog. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, where he's just like, hey, Uncle Anwar, I've been practicing my hypnotizing by using one of the cat clocks, right?
Yeah, and the family dog.
And the family dog, yeah. So Uncle Anwar, it very clearly has just been on a murderous rampage. He's covered in blood. He says that the cops are coming for him, and his time is almost gone, and the police kill him on the lawn. And 25 years later, the brothers Michael and George unearth their uncle.
And we jump into that like it's the beginning of Friday the 13th Part 6.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
We're just at the cemetery.
You would think that this was supposed to be a scene from a previous movie, that we're watching a sequel, right? This is just genius. Like, this is absolute horror comedy brilliance. They did 25 years later, mind you. Remember, it's been 25 years. They dig up this corpse. They break open the coffin. They crack open the skull, and the brain just pops out like it's like a geyser. And they catch it in a jar of liquid that they keep it in. And now the brain, totally functional, fully operational, intact, can talk to them both.
I think they performed a spell at the cemetery, but it went so quickly that...
Did they?
Yeah, and it's super fresh, that brain.
Yeah.
And with the retinas and everything. Like,
yeah, the eyeballs attached, the spinal cord thing.
I think that's the tongue.
You think so? You kept saying that, like there was a tongue piled up at the bottom, but like, I didn't see it moving at all.
We're going to have to reinvestigate.
Yeah. Man, I love a good brain in a jar with the eyeballs still attached.
And the bubbly water was a real great effect.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and the talking water.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it's like an equalizer on, like, a Winamp player or something. Man, 3 years before RoboCop 2, this movie came out. Holy shit. Which I get, just based on the blank stares Kim's given me, if anybody else is unaware, the villain in RoboCop 2, mostly just a brain in a jar with eyeballs attached.
Thanks, John.
And so, yeah, the rest of the movie is that these two kids taking advice from their really shitty uncle about which ladies to kill and take parts from.
Yeah, and so we're set up with the instructions on how to reanimate Sheetar. We need to build a body. We need to Frankenstein ourselves, the perfect woman. But
they get that body pretty quick, too.
That's what I was going to say. So, but it has to be sluts. And
yeah, we need arms and limbs from five immoral women.
And instead of, you know, the movie being this like, oh, we got to kill women. So like they're bringing back dates, which does happen. But the body is already assembled at this point because they go on a fucking mass shooting spree at like a nudie aerobics class.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That is a different movie entirely.
There are a lot of different movies going on inside this movie, Kim. Holy shit.
In a Reagan mask?
Bizarre. And then, yeah, I think the rest of it, like, I need the lungs of two sluts and like all that kind of junk from the uncle. I think that's just for the spell, right? Like, that's just to create the potion.
Which is like the feast stew, right?
It seems like it takes them an eternity to make this fucking stew.
The body was the quickest thing that they built.
Yeah, yeah. They pieced that together, no problem, in like a cutscene. Bam, it was all together.
Yeah, they stole like whatever parts they wanted from the dead aerobic, the dead aerobicizers. And that's what gets the cops involved.
The cops in this make no sense whatsoever.
I fucking love them, though. I love the level of camp in it. Like, every single detective, so overacted. The level of acting from even just the core cast, like the brothers and the animated brain,
yeah,
compared to the detectives, it was like camera crew 2 and camera crew 1, and they never spoke. There was no correlation between the two movies they're making because the cops, they're going so hard. Like, we gotta figure out this murder. And it's kind of insane because they have a lot of facts that I myself had not picked up on.
Yeah.
I didn't even know it was a health food diner until...
until the cops told you.
At least, yeah, like halfway through the movie. I was like, it's health food? Because the one core critic guy who keeps coming back for the Tuesday special is like this really overweight lumberjack who is like their main source of buzz.
Damn, is he actually a food critic?
He's the one that brought all of the buzz to them.
Damn, I did not catch that whatsoever. I was like, wow, this truck driver's a vegetarian in 1987. Good for him.
Now I'm even questioning that logic that I have.
He does have a lot of insider knowledge. Like, there's
they beat him up so much.
Every single time he's at the store, they beat him up, and he keeps coming back. One time they beat him up so much that he barfed all over the restaurant.
And then he kept eating.
Yeah, his response was like, oh, I gotta start again. Like, he was just upset that he wasn't full anymore.
Oh, God.
Every joke in this movie is a bad joke, and I laughed at nearly all of them, but they are all in poor taste, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so they continue to run their diner, and there's some things going on here. The detectives are getting closer and closer. Somehow they figured out that they need to look for health food related stuff.
There was no connective tissue between the murder and that thought. It's just we saw them in the police station like, all right, well, I'm going to go start looking at health food stores.
And the question I have is, so they're seeking out healthy sluts, like vegetarian sluts, because like they go to a weird...
There was a mention of that.
Yeah, so they go to the aerobics, which, okay, that's healthy, I get it. And then they go to like a new wave club
where all the healthy people go
for the sluts there.
Club Dread, by the way.
I loved it.
Yeah,
I fucking loved it.
Big neon sign, Dread. Yes, please.
Also,
I would go there.
The variety of bands that played there was pretty wonderful.
Yeah,
like there was some like cool rockabilly that just went on forever.
Yeah, yeah, with like psycho rockabilly stuff. Yep.
Side note, with some Hitlers, which
lots
is not
the Hitlers,
which is like another thread we have to go down regarding wrestling Hitler.
Yeah, like was the goal of this movie to try and just be as offensive as possible? Was that the plan?
Kind of a John Waters detour.
That's what I'm thinking. I think that, like, to make a midnight movie, it has to be offensive to everyone. If you want to say slut, you have to say homo. If you want to have topless girls, you have to have Nazis. Like, I don't know.
And
the
uncle was pretty vulgar. He was pretty, like, he was the worst of all. Like, yeah, with the derogatory terms.
Yeah, none of these are my words. These are all words that are coming out of actual characters' mouths in the movie. Like,
he talked about not having a dick anymore a lot, and
he
like
sure did.
How much trouble his dick got him in.
I believe he constantly said schlong. If I had a schlong anymore, you would know. Oh, there was also that moment too. I swear to God, there was a police radio at the beginning of the movie that said, there's been a man seen in the neighborhood with a meat cleaver in one hand and his genitals in the other. Yeah. And you're like, what? And then like, you find out that's their uncle who's come barreling into the house. But later on in the movie, he goes, oh, if I hadn't have lost my genitals and my life, I would show you what a true man is. You're like, what?
Oh.
There's a lot of choices in this movie. There is a whole wrestling subplot.
That's what I was going to say. So in between like the cannibalizing promiscuous women.
They're not even promiscuous.
Implied promiscuous women. Yeah, there's a wrestling match with Johnny Hitler.
With Johnny Hitler. Or is it Jimmy Hitler?
Jimmy Hitler.
Yeah, all-American Nazi. Like, that's essentially his thing. One of the brothers is obsessed with wrestling, and he can't do any meal prep without tearing the lettuce in half and throwing it at the TV screen and fighting with the customers because of the results of these wrestling competitions. There's a whole wrestling match later on where he fights Jimmy Hitler. I don't know why.
I also don't know why.
I don't know why any of it's there. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know why the wrestler had to be a Nazi. I don't know why the backing band at Club Dread had to be Nazis. It's just happening.
Like, full-out Hitler mustaches on all of them.
And they're still rocking out!
And the armbands, too, which was
yeah.
a choice.
That's something about that, where it's just like, you can pretend to be a Nazi, and you can call yourself Jimmy Hitler, but something about wearing the armband,
is like
an extra step that you're like, yeah, this went too far. Let's just take a few minutes to like rattle off a few little bits of things that we were like, wow, that's happening right now, that are just like not crucial to the plot. What was some of your favorite junk in this movie?
Okay, so my favorite kill. Oh, this is no.
I know what it is.
It's
and
hard.
If you don't say it, I'm saying
it's
it.
It's hard. So, well, there's one that's part of a subplot, so I won't talk about that yet. But just the main like bringing girls back to kill them. One woman. Her head is deep fried.
And it like, sure is.
Battered and deep fried.
Yeah,
and
he's slathering batter on her like it's the sexiest thing they've ever done.
And
right?
She's so into it. He deep fries her head and she comes out of the deep fryer looking like a fucking jalapeno popper.
Yeah.
Like a mushroom packed deep fried ball.
Yeah, perfectly golden fried dough running around the restaurant.
Oh,
boy. He ends up knocking her head off with a hockey stick or something.
Comes clean off, though.
Yeah, real good.
Fried al dente.
Okay, and then, you know what, I would say one of my second favorites is comes immediately after that, where her friend, who's with her, who's not...
Oh, that's a good kill. I forgot about that one.
Right? She's like, oh, there's something wrong with my friend. I gotta go. And she finds her body. She finds the other brother just pulling her intestines out and throwing them around the diner. There's no blinds on this window. Anybody would see this going on.
At one point, the cook comes out just holding intestines while the restaurant is full of people. Like, they have no care for body parts
Not
and blood
all.
And how people are still thinking this restaurant is even remotely vegetarian.
I don't know how they've remained in business this long. It doesn't make any goddamn sense. But so she's about to leave. She has to go back for her purse, I guess. But when she finally gets out and she's headed toward the back door, the other brother appears and fucking meat cleavers her in half?
In half.
From the head down. She just splits in half. It's real good stuff.
It was really nice.
Did not expect that. Did not see it coming. Looked great. There's another one that's super silly and dumb. And this is I think, where it's the beginning of them finding these two girls and bringing them back to the restaurant where they're not letting them into Club Dread. I guess because of dress code or they don't look cool enough. And
you guys don't look like vegetarians.
Yeah, after a bit of a scuffle with the bouncer, he grabs the bouncer by his collars, throws him into the road, and a lowrider car who's just like bouncing around like a mid-90s music video squishes his head and everybody in line laughs.
The laughter was a choice.
It was good stuff. Shout out to our friend Will, by the way, who's been trying to find that clip for nearly 20 years, something he watched in childhood, did not know what it was, and then last week we were hanging out, trying to rack our brains to think about what it was. Lo and behold, 48 hours later, we watched it for the podcast.
The funniest thing is that we hung out with him, and we were trying to like go through his horror collection to see if he had Blood Diner, because
right?
We'd been meaning to watch it, and the movie we were looking for was the movie he was looking for.
That's
which
crazy.
Is so funny.
Simulation's working, guys.
This is simulation theory. So there's another really fun, there's a bunch of different stupid kills. Like, one completely inconsequential kill is the chef brother driving in a van and running over this hitchhiker. But the truck is bouncing like he's having the best day of his life.
Yeah.
And he's like walking on sunshine.
Yeah, every time he looks up, the guy's getting back up out of the rides. Okay, fine, well, I guess I'll just reverse and hit you again. And it's,
he does
he
it like
done it for an hour.
10 times.
He could have done that all night.
So there's a rival diner. He's got no customers, and this vegetarian diner is getting all the success. Oh, also, he's got this weird quirk where he's like a ventriloquist.
Yeah, like he's always got this one customer sitting at his table that he's bickering with, but it's a dummy that talking to.
I did not understand what was going on because it isn't until the very end of the whole scene where like the detectives are there and they're
are interacting with him and the doll.
They're interacting with the chef and the dummy. And then at the very end of the scene, you see the chef doing the mouthing for the dummy.
It's bizarre. It is a choice.
It was so weird because nobody was reacting to the fact that there was this like inanimate dude sitting at the end of the bar.
Nope. It seemed like it was rehearsal. Like the actor wasn't there yet. So like, we'll just put this dummy here. We can go through our scenes and, you know, like if we keep it out of focus enough, we could actually use some of these reaction shots. No one will know it's a dummy.
So he's infiltrating the vegetarian diner.
With the dummy. Has to bring the dummy.
The Tutman Cafe. He goes, at first he goes and gets a doggy bag, because I'm assuming he's going to like Plankton a la SpongeBob, reverse engineer the Krusty Krab, or the Krusty Patty. But he comes back when the guys, I think, are at the wrestling match.
Yes.
The guys are somewhere, and he steals the brain. He steals Uncle Anwar.
Because I guess he figures that's the key to all of this. Oh, no, because he's going to tell him how to cook. Like that's kind of what's happening throughout the movie, too, right? Like, these kids have, like, built a successful health food restaurant, but Anwar's got the real recipes.
They have to go rescue Uncle Anwar from this rival chef. And it's like, I don't know how it happens, but both of his hands get cut off.
Oh, yes! So man, it is so bizarre to just have a movie blipped from your memory as soon as you're finished watching it, but to then relive it in live time.
We watched this less than 12 hours ago.
Yeah. One of the brothers cuts his hand off, and then, like, that's when he's like, wow, I better get out of here. But as he's like going to his car and closing the door, he gets his other hand cut off.
And then he's trying to drive away, but the blood from his like wounded wrists is just filling the
inside of the windshield.
Oh my god.
He can't see.
And then he crashes the car because he can't see through his wrist blood.
Oh, it's one of the funniest things I've seen all year.
Yeah, that's...
And it's in one of the dumbest movies I've seen in my entire life.
That's maybe my new favorite thing of all time is just that death scene. The unfortunate, I'm bleeding too hard to escape. And, like, the futile nature of trying to drive with just forearms and no hands.
Oh, boy. What an image. What an image.
Oh.
And his reaction to it is just like, oh, what a bad day. Like,
this
he's not
is
in
awful.
Pain. Yeah. This is a real inconvenience.
Oh, just an absolute joy. Just made my year.
They had to put Anwar's brain, Uncle Anwar, which I gotta tell you, actual genuinely funny name. I don't know why. They had to put his brain into the sheetar body.
I do not
right?
understand the magic. So yeah, at some point in the back of the van, they put Uncle Anwar in sheetar.
Yes, but they
I don't
also
know why.
Needed.
So Uncle Anwar becomes sheetar.
They also needed like the soul of a virgin, right?
As you do
As
to complete
you
the spell.
Do.
Because I think sheetar is supposed to eat the virgin.
Oh, that's what it is. Sheetar is supposed to eat the virgin, like a
first meal kind of thing.
I was gonna say like a black widow. When sheetar, when sheetar is resurrected, we forgot to mention this earlier. When sheetar is resurrected,
she has lightning for eyes. Oh.
She has lightning for eyes. She shoots lightning balls from. She shoots lightning bolts from her fingers and kills band members. And she has like a fucking Venus flytrap. Mouth in her chest cavity that she uses to eat people's heads.
I love the Venus flytrap belly.
I love it too.
It's pretty wonderful.
It's real good stuff.
The whole time I was like, they better succeed because I want to see that Venus flytrap eat someone.
Yeah. Yeah. And she does. She totally eats one of the brothers' brains. Like, just like rips his head clean off. It's good stuff.
I mean, the cops do kind of... I don't know how the cops figure out anything in this movie. They are steps ahead of me as an audience member.
Yeah. There is one moment, though, where the police officer is on a phone call with her partner, who's an asshole. and he's like, you need to keep an eye out for Namint... with Anwar Namnint. He's dead. Oh my god, we completely glossed over the fact that they go to meet this detective who 25 years ago killed Anwar Namnint, and he has to like relay the harrowing
And his
story.
Wife is like PTSD.
Yeah, well, the best part too is that it's very clearly a scene from the beginning of the movie where the police kill Uncle Anwar. We only see that scene from inside the house with the kids, but now we're seeing it outside where there's a bit of a showdown.
No new information is added.
No new information is added in the flashback. We can see that he says nothing to police officers. He just runs at them with a meat cleaver. They shoot him dead and they just call it a day. But when we come back to that police officer, he's like, I could have swore that I heard him say, I'm gonna come back from the dead one day and kill you. Like, are you trying to retcon something that happened in your movie 30 seconds ago? Damn. That's bold.
Loved it.
But yeah, so they win. They resurrect Sheetar. She has the blood feast of all blood feasts.
Yeah, even though she doesn't get her virgin. I guess maybe that's supposed to imply that the brother she ate was a virgin. Maybe that's why she still survives.
Oh, maybe. There were a lot of jokes about him being gay, and it's probably just because he likes wrestling. But maybe that's what they're trying to imply, is that he's a virgin.
But yeah, so it ends with Sheetar getting in some creep's convertible.
Yeah! Yeah, we follow her high heels out of that fucking mayhem massacre.
Which is fucking wonderful, because the guy that picks her up is like a complete slob, and she goes like, I'm Sheetar, with like her pointy ass teeth. But then we cut to him pulling away like completely normal with his date. Like, yeah, she didn't just reveal a mouthful of monster teeth.
Yes.
Like, still fine.
It's like the end of the ruins, right? Or the thing. What a bizarre movie.
So bonkers. And we need to petition to get this movie on every single streaming service so we can do a fucking watch party of this, because I need to watch this with a huge group of people.
You're absolutely right. This is a movie that should be watched with a crowd, with a group of friends, and definitely a lot of alcohol, because it does not make a lot of sense, and it's got a lot of bad, crude humor.
No, I
like, brace yourself for that. That it's that level of crude humor from the late 80s. But what a wild time. So, Kim, I gotta ask you, what's your rating of Blood Diner?
Oh, boy. Is a 4 out of 4, like, ludicrous to say?
Okay, look, I will let you give it a 4 out of 4 as long as you fucking explain yourself.
I just had a fucking blast. I really enjoyed it. I'm going to watch it 26 more times.
You think it's a perfect movie?
It's awful. It's an awful movie. It's so bad. It's super crass. It's outdated.
It was outdated for 1987.
There's bad dubbing. There's lots of Hitlers.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of impressive how...
3.5 out of 4.
Oh, I'm going to give it a... I'm gonna...
If you give it a 4 out of 4, I'm punching you in the face right now.
That would be hysterical. I'm gonna give it a 3 out of 4. I think it deserves less, but man, did I have fun watching this movie. It's a piece of shit, and...
No, it's not.
No, it's... I take that back. It's not. It's a unique movie. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, it's just...
Just say it's a unique movie, and we'll just stop the podcast right there. No outro. It's a unique film.
But that's just our opinion. Let us know what you thought of Blood Diner over on Twitter at NOFS Podcast and in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord, which you can find at NOFSPodcast.com/Discord if you're not in there already.
We're going to be finishing up Kooky Cannibals Part 2 episode in 2 weeks' time. We will also have the review for Malignant here on the podcast feed, so subscribe wherever you're getting Nightmare on Film Street. And if you have a few seconds, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. It really helps us in the feeds and gets more fiends listening to Nightmare on Film Street.
We're going to be keeping the subject of Part 2 under wraps for now, but It also features a blood feast meant to resurrect an Egyptian god. And I found out today, Blood Diner was originally intended as a sequel to this movie that we'll be talking about in 2 weeks.
I think it's a spiritual sequel, like inspired by.
Well, it is now. They originally scrapped that idea. But knowing that, it's kind of interesting to think of this other movie as a prequel to Blood Diner. And I'm excited to show it to Kim because she has not yet seen this movie.
I have not seen it.
And we will be back in 2 weeks to talk about Kooky Cannibals Part 2. Until then, I'm John.
I'm Kim. Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.